Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 84 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today are Marcy and Roger Wister of the Roadhouse Minute, of 12 Days of White Christmas, and of the Speed Movie Minute. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Hi there, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Glad you guys could come back for another day, you know, because I'm through making a schmuck of myself. Yeah.
Unlike Harry.
That's right. That's right.
At least he's making an effort here. I'm happy about that.
No, I disagree. I guess we'll get to that point.
Well, we'll get to that. So minute 84 begins with Harry continuing his options and ends with Harry asking a question. So we ended things yesterday with Harry leaving a message for Sally saying, you're either A, not at home, and then we continue with that, and he goes, or B, home, but don't want to talk to me, or C, home, desperately want to talk to me, but trapped under something heavy. If it's either A or C, please call me back. Now, we talked a little bit yesterday about the idea of multiple choices, and, you know, and we also talked about Billy Crystal knowing how to, you know, give the lines. We'll find out later whether this is in the script or not. What do you guys think? Do you think it's in the script or do you think this is ad-libbed?
I think this is in the script.
I'm gonna guess ad-libbed.
All right, well, one of you is correct, but we'll find out when we get to
I would imagine so. I have left this voicemail as a message to someone, but only sort of ironically as a joke.
Oh, like you've
left
you
the same exact voice
it?
Message?
Yeah.
Huh. Very nice. Very nice.
I think it's funny, and you can slide it into just about any situation.
Are you talking about the singing voicemail message?
No. The one where he says, no, you know, A, B, or C. Like, you know, you're.
Oh, I see.
You're trapped under something heavy.
I was imagining you singing, Call Moi.
I won't even sing on the podcast, Marcy.
I know.
I mean, and I love that we see Harry sitting on his bed. As he's leaving this message, and then you can see how messy his room is. You know, we talked earlier in the week about his kitchen, how his kitchen looked a lot neater than we thought. But here, you know, the bed is made, but you can see his shoes are just thrown on the floor, and you see maybe it's a towel or a shirt or something that's on like the dresser.
Yeah.
You know, by the lamp. With a few books over there, he actually has a plant with a what's that called, a watering spout. I don't know what you would call it.
Watering can.
There you go. Watering can with a spout. There you go. Which is it's a strange place to keep that in your bedroom.
Well, it's right next to the plant that it uses it for.
Yeah, but usually you have to then take it and go fill it up with water. Yeah, I could just have that sit there with water for a few days and every day pour a little bit of water in there.
Yeah, I think you're being a little harsh, Rob. I think 8 out of 10 bachelors would probably have a bedroom that looks more or less like this.
Oh, for sure. I'm not being harsh on Harry. What I'm saying is that earlier in the week I mentioned that I found the fact that his kitchen was so neat, you know, not to be Harry-esque. And, you know, this room fits more along the lines of what I would expect from Harry.
Mm. I was thinking the other day about how I would live if I didn't have to clean up after myself because I lived with you, Roger.
What?
I was just thinking about it, like where I would leave my messes if I could just leave my messes around.
No, the way you constructed that sentence makes it sound like I'm the reason why you clean up after yourself.
Well, I think we both civilize each other a little bit, right?
Okay. Thank you for qualifying it from that standpoint. You made me sound like a tremendous nag just then.
Oh, no, not at all. Like, I do it on purpose to, like, make our house nicer. But also, like, there's some areas where I think, oh, I would just leave stuff here if I didn't think it would be in anybody else's way.
We should try
that. I actually understood it the other way. I understood that you were more or less saying that Roger's the one who cleans up.
Oh, no. He does clean up after some things, yeah. But,
no, we clean up after each other. We should try that as an experiment, Marcy, for a week. Just like
Leave stuff places.
Just leave stuff wherever that we want.
Stop making the bed, maybe. See how that goes.
Yeah, you're always the bed maker. Rob, can I ask you a question about this bedroom scene?
Of course you can.
Since you gave us, and maybe this is a note for later, so I don't want to step on your notes, but you gave us such a good geography minute on Monday's episode. You do get this fantastic view out of his bedroom window at what appears to be grain silos.
Missile silos?
Something like that. Like, is this like rear projection video? Like, or is this actually looking out into New York City? Like, do you have any sense of where this is being staged?
They don't mention it on the commentary, but my understanding is that these are real buildings behind him.
Yeah.
Those water towers?
I'm sure.
Yeah, but no, but they're buildings behind him also. Like, meaning that the shot is apparently, from what I understood from the commentary, they spent a lot of time filming things in real places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even though they would be filming just this room, so, you know, the look outside the window is real, as opposed to it being, you know, just, you know, a backdrop or a matte painting. I mean, back then, obviously, they didn't use green screen and stuff like that. But you're right. Those do look like some sort of silos, even though they are water towers, probably. But those are pretty big water towers also.
Yeah.
You know, to have right in the middle of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in case of fire, they're not allowed to have wooden buildings in Manhattan anymore. There's only, like, on the island, a couple left in existence.
Well, not to get a little grim, but the metal buildings don't help either.
Yeah, but I thought a lot of them are constructed in stone now, because at least they wouldn't go up in a giant blaze.
Mm, that is true.
Could be. And so is there anything else you want to say about his room, Roger?
No.
Besides the great view he has?
Yeah.
They actually do look like you know, spaceships that are about to launch or something like that.
It's probably nice to have that view compared to, like, being a few stories lower and just having the view of another side of a building.
Or into someone else's apartment.
Yeah, he must be kind of a little high up.
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe what they're saying there is, like, he's pretty successful.
Yeah, maybe.
You get the impression that they both are somewhat successful in what they do.
Oh yeah.
You know, because they're not working all the time. They're always together talking and going to the Museum of Modern Art and, you know, whatever else they were able to do in their free time.
Yeah.
You know, but, I think it doesn't really matter. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
You know, whether Harry and Sally are wealthy or not, doesn't make a difference. I mean, come on, we all know from you know, Friends and Seinfeld that there's no way that any of those characters could really afford the apartments that they're living in.
Mm-hmm.
Especially not Rachel. So, right. So then the scene changes, and then we're outside. We get to see once again the fresh air of New York. But right before that, we see Sally's face as she's debating whether she wants to answer the phone or not. You know, we get like 5 or 6 seconds of that. And then the shot changes and we see Harry and Jess outside, you know, getting ready to buy hot dogs.
I love the prices on this hot dog stand.
Prices are going up.
Amazing.
Did either of you look how much these prices are today?
No, I haven't, but I would guess at least $10.
Okay. Well, I did look it up, so I have the answers to that. So first of all, I wanted to mention the cart. It says on top, Sabret, right? Yep. Sabret Frankfurters and Rolls. So this is actually a real company. All right. So it's actually the brand name is Sabret, but it's owned by Marathon Enterprises Incorporated, which is a regional supplier of meats and gourmet delicatessen products to the food service industry in New York. And they have their headquarters in Englewood, New Jersey. There's a guy named Samuel Ogus who opened the Star Baking Company in 1928. Which later on became the Sabret Food Products. He opened it with a partner named Fritz Frankel, and they ended up, you know, Sabret is known for spicy all beef kosher style hot dogs. and they had carts all over New York area, and a lot of places, a lot of famous places would actually buy their hot dogs from them. Nathan's Famous in Coney Island bought from them, Papaya King, and Stevens Company, which supplied hot dogs to all the ballparks. So again, it's a very popular brand of hot dog that they decided to use here.
Wait a minute.
We can get those in the grocery store around us.
Nathan's Famous buys their hot dogs from some other company?
Maybe not anymore. But back in the day, it's...
That's shocking. I thought Nathan's was their own manufacturing brand.
I've seen Nathan's in the grocery store, too. Maybe that changed eventually.
Wow. That sort of... lowers them a couple of pegs in my estimation, for sure.
Well, what can you do? So I did a search for how much, things cost nowadays. So we have a list here. So at the on the card itself, it says that hot dogs are $1, but it's crossed off that it used to say 75 cents. Sausages are $1.25. Onion is an extra quarter. Sauerkraut is an extra 15 cents. And a soda is 75 cents. So I did a search. And as of May 22, all right, how much do you guys think a hot dog would cost?
Oh, good. You're talking about at a hot dog cart in Manhattan?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Marcy, what do you think? You go first.
I'm going to say $5.
Yeah, I'll say $4.50.
Okay, you both went over because it's $4.
Oh.
Okay. All right, now next thing next item on the list is sausages. So how much a sausage back in 1988 will cost $1.25, and how much do you think it costs today?
$7.
Well, I'll just use my mathematical skills and say that it probably cost $5.
And you are correct, Roger.
Oh. Wow. You got that right. See, I did a little ratio there. Good job, math. All you math students out there, it's 25% more than the hot dog cost.
That's right. All right. So how much does the soda cost today, if that's the case?
I'll go first, Marcy. So these are 12-ounce cans, not 20-ounce bottles. So I'm going to guess a can of soda costs $2.50.
Yeah,
it was 75 cents back then.
I understand.
I was going to say $1.75.
Yeah, well, it's $3.
$3. Wow. $3. For 12 ounces of soda, that's not good value.
Yeah. And a 20 ounces is $4.
Yeah.
Golly. I'm glad I don't drink soda. But they charge so much for water, too. It's so annoying.
Okay, water. How much do you think water costs?
The same as the soda.
16 to 16.9 fluid ounces or 24 fluid ounces? How much would you say there?
It's $3, too.
Yeah, I'll say.
So the smaller one is. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's all right. No, good. Go ahead.
You give your guess.
$3.50 for the small bottle.
And the big one?
Oh, sorry. $5.
No, so it's $2 and $3 for water.
That's pretty cheap for something that should be free.
That's true. I mean, everything on this list is the highest priced thing on this list is $5. Because these are the amount of what vendors are allowed to charge. There's apparently like a vendors union or something like that. These are the amounts that. But I mean, a lot of the stuff is $4 or $5. I mean, even a bag of peanuts is $4.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. So basically, it doesn't matter. You don't get to set your own prices. So really, the only thing that matters is the location of your food cart.
Apparently, that's what it sounds like.
That makes sense. And that seems like it would make it a little more fair for everybody in New York.
That makes sense. Why does that make sense? Shouldn't there be allowed to be price competition? Like, why do we have to have socialism in food carts?
Well, because there's so many people involved, they would get so pissed off.
Well, anyway, the other thing that I just kind of makes me chuckle about this is like, when was the last time you paid cash for something?
At a stand like that, this fall.
Well, okay. I'm just
for the
saying,
nuts for nuts that I bought for $4.
The notion of paying cash just, again, feels like I put that in the same column with my answering machine.
Yeah.
Harry and Jess are standing at the food cart, and they're talking to one another. And or actually just Harry's talking because Jess doesn't say anything here at all. And so Harry says to Jess, obviously, she doesn't want to talk to me. What do I have to do? Be hit over the head? If she wants to call me, she'll call me. I'm through making a schmuck of myself. And I mean, I like the fact that he's sort of giving a monologue here, but it would be nice to hear Jess's response to this also. You know, it's just like it's too quick from my perspective, the way that they're showing this. What do you guys think?
Well, don't we have another scene a little bit later on where they're crossing the road and he's kind of continuing the same rant?
No, that we had a few weeks ago.
Oh, that was before. Sorry, I'm getting my timeline mixed up.
Marcy, what do you think that Jess and Marie think about this whole interregnum between when they got that phone call in bed and when they show up at their New Year's party? Like, are they? Do you think Jess is just like exhausted at this point?
I think for sure, yeah, because I think that these two people have probably gone back and forth a little bit. With their friends trying to process this relationship, and their friends just kind of think that they either should do it or not do it, you know, kind of make up with their mind.
I think that's probably true. I mean, sometimes like you want to be a good friend, but yeah. At the same time, at some point, like you kind of get exhausted listening to two people talk about the problem that they're having with each other and just life, just ruminating over it ad nauseum.
Yep. Especially since they're probably hearing both sides of the story. You know, Jess is hearing his side and Marie's hearing her side. And the two of them are talking about it. And they're probably, okay, we've had enough of this. That's it. You know, just let them both get on with their lives and that's it. Or get together. One of the two.
Yeah, there's a lot of unfilmed. There's a lot of unfilmed conversations at the end of the day between Jess and Marie where they're like, oh, God, did you hear what Sally said to me today? It's like, oh, God, not again.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, what I love also is we can see the newsstand behind them. We see like tons of different magazines.
I want to talk about this newsstand, Rob.
Okay.
No, go ahead, though.
Okay. No, so I just wanted to mention all the different magazines that I noticed there. You can see there's Circus, Newsweek, Fortune, Time, Elle, Spy, GQ, Bon Appetit, Playboy, Penthouse, and People. Those are the ones that I was able to make up the names of them.
I think it's fascinating that I would say fairly prominently placed in the center are the two pornographic magazines.
Huh.
I don't think that's done purposely from the perspective of the movie. That's probably where, you know, they would probably be placed, you know, on a newsstand. It would be, you know, in the middle towards the bottom type of thing, you know, because, you know, people are going to go there and buy it. That's why it's there. You know, if you have magazines that people aren't going to walk by and buy, then you don't want to have it. You're not going to try and sell them. The question is, from my perspective, it's very open for kids to be able to see those things. You know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, there used to be things that were that would block, you know, the pornographic ones.
Yeah, those magazines. Yes,
I was 15 when this movie came out, so I'm talking about in the same time period, you know, where they would have whether it was white paper or whatever it is, you know, blocking so you couldn't see the cover. You might be able to see the name Playboy on the top or Penthouse or whatever it was, but you couldn't see the actual cover of the magazine.
No, that's what I remember too. You know, like I remember being a pubescent boy, and yeah, like you would go to like a convenience store or something like that, and they would always be like on the top row with brown paper in front of them to protect
maybe
from
it was
prying
brown
eyes. But like,
I don't even remember.
This Penthouse is almost exactly at eye level for an 8-year-old.
Yes. And forget about the ones that are below that. That and that's on the second shelf. The yeah. first shelf has all the pornographic magazines for women.
Sure. Oh yeah.
Actually, you can also see a Vanity Fair. That's also like right below the penthouse. So I don't know, like where's it? And something just dance.
So, is Vanity yeah, Fair porn for women?
No, it's porn for yuppies.
I don't know.
It's porn for what?
Porn for yuppies.
For yuppies.
But oh, for yuppies. Sorry, that was just a joke.
Well, at least they don't have glamour, right?
Sure.
Glamour. The magazines cost so much.
If you
now.
Understood, I don't know if you guys understood the reference. It was a Seinfeld reference.
Oh, no, sorry, I'm not.
With George.
I'm not. I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of Seinfeld like some of my friends do.
Well, that was the episode where you know the four of them had a contest, and it all started because George was at his parents' house and saw a glamour magazine.
That's hilarious. So,
yeah. It's my favorite episode of Seinfeld just because of the fact that they are able to discuss a topic without mentioning the topic.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, it shows how brilliant the writers were that they're able to do something like that. So yeah, anything else you want to say about the magazines, Roger?
Nope.
Okay. One of the things that's listed there is People magazine, and I always found it interesting that People used to have all their top 20s or top 100 lists of all these different things. You know, they had like the sexiest man alive.
Yeah.
And do you remember any of the people that were listed as the sexiest man alive between 1985? Between 1985 and 2022, they did it every year.
Didn't we get George Clooney in there? Barack Obama.
There's a handful. Wait, Barack Obama was the sexiest man alive? I don't think so.
I thought so. No.
I don't know.
No, he's not on the list.
Okay.
I think, and I don't really want to go through the whole list right now, but
I can go through it real quickly. We won't discuss them. I can just quickly go through them. Okay. So you have, starting in 85, you have Mel Gibson, Mark Harmon, Harry Hamlin, JFK Jr., Sean Connery, Tom Cruise, Patrick Swayze, Nick Nolte, Richard Gere, Keanu Reeves, Brad Pitt, Denzel Washington, George Clooney, Harrison Ford, Richard Gere, Brad Pitt, Pierce Brosnan, Ben Affleck, Johnny Depp, Jude Law, Matthew McConaughey, George Clooney again, Matt Damon, Hugh Jackman, Johnny Depp, Ryan Reynolds, Bradley Cooper, Channing Tatum, Adam Levine, Chris Hemsworth, David Beckham, Dwayne Johnson, Blake Shelton, Idris Elba, John Legend, Michael B. Jordan, Paul Rudd, and the most recent one in 2022 was Chris Evans.
Huh.
Then it changes again, the scene, and we see once again Harry, you know, he says, I don't want to make a schmuck of myself, and then the next thing we know, he's making a schmuck of himself. He's on the phone, and we can see here that he actually went and bought the karaoke machine that he was so in love with when they were in the Sharper Image a few months beforehand.
It's such a great callback. Marcy, can I ask you a question about this scene, though?
Sure.
Like, you were saying at the beginning of today's episode that you feel like at least Harry is making an effort. And I'm assuming that it's because of scenes like this.
Yeah.
I feel like, A, this is a pretty pathetic thing for him to do, and B, like, I don't know. I think in 1988 or 1989, sorry, like,
no, this is 88. This is still 88 because
yeah. So I think back then, scenes like this, there are a lot of scenes like this in movies. This is like the Say Anything boombox scene, like guys pursuing women to the point of almost obsession was sort of a funny joke. Like, I feel like now, if someone were to do this, like, this would read really different. Like, dude, you need to move on.
Yeah, but at the same time, they were friends. And I don't know. I think that he's coming at it in a different way and trying to make amends with his friend. Do you think that he's, like, being too aggressive?
I think he's being too aggressive because she's rebuffing him the whole time. You know, she's rebuffing him by just ignoring him. You know,
yeah,
get the point. You know, take a
I don't know.
Marcy, we've had to go to a lot of boundaries training sessions in the last 20 years working at our school. I'd have to say at this point, he's crossed over some sort of boundary a long time ago. And like, he needs to just accept the fact that at this point, she doesn't want him in her life.
Okay. I guess I don't feel like they've had enough of a conversation to be in that spot.
Well, I think that's the point.
But I always think that it's a little bit better to have a conversation than to not. And I think he keeps trying to have the conversation with her. And I think that's important to do.
Right. Yeah, but not he's not doing it the right way. That's
but
the problem.
But she has the prerogative to not be willing to have that conversation. And his response shouldn't be to double down like this. It should be to just give her space until she's ready to process.
I see what you're saying. Good point.
Yeah. See, right. I learned some of those things from those trainings that I was sort of paying attention to.
That's good. So Harry starts singing, and I'm gonna spare you all. I'm not gonna sing. I'm just gonna read through what he says. He says, if you're feeling sad and lonely, there's a service I can render. Tell the one who digs you only, I can be so warm and tender. Call me. Maybe it's late. So just call me. Don't be afraid to just phone moi. Call me and I'll be around. Give me a call. And while he's singing, we see Sally, you know, putting her jacket on and, you know, walking towards the door of her apartment. We see that the Christmas tree is already all set up and lit. So she figured that out. You know, wasn't just, you know, after she got into her apartment, I guess it was easier for her to figure out how to decorate it. And then she starts trying to open the door. And as she's opening the door, it switches back to Harry still singing. And, you know, that I think part of the whole idea here is we're expected to believe that she's left the apartment while he's still, you know, doing his karaoke routine. And then, you know, they shock us by having her answer the phone and say, hi, Harry. And then you see that he's thrown off. He's not expecting it either because he doesn't know what to say. He wasn't expecting her to answer.
Why do we think that this is the moment where she breaks down and decides to pick up the phone?
It was the moi.
It's the French.
It was the French who did it.
Maybe she realizes that she's got to put a stop to this.
Maybe she really, yeah. Like this is, she's got to think this is rock bottom for this. And if it's going to be this bad, God knows what tomorrow is going to be like.
Correct. Yeah. I think that's part of what it is. So then he goes, hello, hi. I didn't know that you were there. What are you doing? Now, first of all, what do you mean that, you know, he's saying, I didn't know you were there. He was hoping that she's going to listen to this later when she comes home at night and say, ooh, you know, now I need to call Harry back.
Oh, I think so.
Because he's serenading me so well with his singing. I don't know.
I mean, don't you think, I'm sure both of you have at one point placed a call to someone with the intention of leaving them a message and not actually wanting to have an interactive conversation with that person.
Yeah, of course, I've done that.
Yeah, for sure.
But so. And nowadays we can send text messages instead. Yeah, it's a little easier.
That's right. Voice calls are almost moving into the same category with the answering machine.
Well, yeah, sometimes you send a text message to somebody, let's just say it's your dad, and they call you. It backfired. Like,
Marcy, I'm going to let you in a little secret. I do that too.
Just wanted to send him a text message, and now I'm on a conversation with him. That's funny. Right.
That does happen. And I love her response. She said, I was just on my way out. And then he goes, well, where are you going? Like, is it any of your business? Why are you asking, where am I going?
I would say this. So if we view sort of the whole rest of this week after the wedding scene as being like direct references back to previous scenes in the movie that we saw them together, you know, there was like the karaoke from the Sharper Image scene. I feel like this phone call scene, because the last time we saw them on the phone, it's that scene where they're sitting in bed watching Casablanca.
Yes.
And you very clearly, you can tell from that scene that the two of them are essentially just comfortable having these stream of, this seems like a very normal question for him to ask her when they were still good friends.
When they were friends, that's the thing. It's now awkward for them.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's not a weird question. The way she answers it, it proves that, like, there's no more juice in this conversation, in this relationship.
Right. Correct. No, I agree with you on that. You're right. That, you know, we can see that I think what you're saying is right, that the idea is what they're trying to show us here is that they're trying to act the way they acted before, but it's all just coming out awkwardly because, you know, there's this elephant in the room for them. So that's how I would interpret it.
Yep.
Do either of you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Nope.
No.
All right. So we talked earlier about whether the, you know, his multiple choice question was ad-libbed or not. And the answer is that, yes, it was ad-libbed.
Winner.
There you go. two more points for yeah. Marcy. Because the full line of what he says in the script is, I'll take this as a sign you're not home, or else you're home with that cretin you've been dating. And if he's there with you now, please understand when I say cretin, I mean it in the best possible sense of the word. And then it shows the phone ringing again. And then Harry goes, you there? No? Okay, well, call me back. And, you know, we see Sally listening in on the conversation, you know, clearly still upset. And then they have him do the singing. And then instead of Sally leaving, she's actually coming into the apartment carrying shopping bags. That's the difference there. So, you know, it's a little different. So therefore, she comes home and hears him on the phone, and then at some point decides to pick up the phone, as opposed to, you know, her being on her way out and then changing her mind. But she says to him that I was just on my way out. Because how would he know, right? It's not video conferencing. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what we have here in the script. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating Courting Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to dating or courting. So we already heard Marcy's side of a story on Tuesday. So Roger, why don't you give us a story today?
Well, thank you. So this story is almost a direct continuation of the previous story. So,
I thought you were going to give us your side of the same.
No, I'm not going to tell the same story again. No.
No, but it's not the same story because it would be your perspective.
Well, I'm not telling that story, Rob. So listeners, remember on our Tuesday episode, we talked about how Marcy and Roger had their fabulous first date. And so I was all psyched for the next weekend. This is January in Massachusetts, and I worked at a different boarding school at the time, but I knew that Marcy was sort of an outdoorsy person. And so I said, you know, we're going to go on a hike, which is funny to hear me say that now, because that's definitely not what I would pick for a date. And so, you know, we went on this hike. It was okay, but it was really cold. And we were probably out for longer than we should have been, or at least I should have been paying more attention, but Marcy's a trooper. And so, you know, we're out for like a couple of hours and then we come back. And like, at this point, Marcy, correct me if I'm wrong, at this point, you were pretty miserable.
You did not realize that I have no thermal regulation at all.
Well, I know that now that you are cold-blooded.
I am very cold.
I didn't know that at the end, but I could tell at the end that you were not happy. And, you know, we said our nice goodbyes and you left, and I remember I felt really sad. Like, I was just like, oh God, I just blew it. Cause I told my friend the week before, I was like, I just went on the greatest first date ever. And then, you know, now the second date, I was thinking, oh, well, you know what? This could be the end. Just to finish the story, the amusing coda is that I think Marcy was worried as well. So she called me the next day. So this, I guess the hike was on Saturday. She called me the next day and she invited me over to her house and we watched football.
Yep. And we were warm and inside.
We had some nice, was it beef barley soup?
Yes, it was with mushrooms.
And after that weekend, we pretty much saw each other nonstop after that. And that was 21 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Here we are.
Here we are talking about when I met Sally minute by minute.
There you go.
All right, great. Thank you very much for that story. Do you want to once again tell people how they can find you?
Sure. So let's see, this is our fourth. So if listeners, if you've already consumed all of the other sources of content that I've referenced on this week's episodes, and you should, and you want to get like a deep cut, like, you know, discovering the Velvet Underground before they became the Velvet Underground, you can go on iTunes or Google Podcasts and download a podcast called I Think I Saw That. And if you think Marcy is funny this week, you should listen to these episodes, because this is where Marcy and I talk about movies. And the conceit of the show is that I remember pretty much everything about any movie I've ever seen. And Marcy can watch a movie this week and it can be gone the next week. So we talk about a movie that we've both seen before. We talk about what we remember. Then we watch the movie and then we talk about it afterwards as sort of like a proper recap podcast. So there's only like 10 or 11 episodes, because then we got into Roadhouse and we haven't gone back to it. But I think a lot of those episodes are very good. The audio quality is not so great, not like it is now, but I think the content is top shelf.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.